Part 1. The Summons. Chapter 1. Orbit of Acadia. Below them, the planet was poised, half in light, half in darkness. Major Isaiah Benedict could not tell if a new day was coming on, or if the night was falling. He stood with War Master Rice and his posse of command staff on the viewing platforms of the Fidelitas Vector, and remembered how he'd left Acadia over 20 years before. In those 20 years, he'd had more than his fair share of benighted ice worlds, void moons and jungle worlds with blood-sucking nanobs that dropped onto you from branches above. He'd seen the worst of the galaxy, and now, looking down upon Cadia, he remembered his last moments on his home world. A young white shield, without a kill to his name. Bendix's father had never got the chance to go off-planet. He was one of the 1 in 10 Cadian shock troopers whose draft drew them as a territorial guard. It was his life to stay at home and stand ready to protect Cadia. But war had not come, and that uneventful career was a shame that had discoloured his life. When the 16-year-old Isaiah Benedict drew an off-world draft, he was both proud and envious of his son. It was a hard thing for a dour father to express, so he'd done what many fathers had before him. Bought a bottle of Arcady Prime and got both himself and Benedict drunk. Benedict remembered the night clearly. They had been sitting at the round camp table that stood in the middle of the small sub-hab central room of their home. His father had drawn up the camp chairs and slammed the bottle down between them, set two shot glasses on the table. He had forced a smile as he unscrewed the top, crumpled it up in his hand and threw it back over his shoulder, where it had rattled in the corner of the room. His mother had left them a few plates of boiled grog slab and cabbage on the table. Benedict had tried to line his stomach as his father poured them a shot glass each. "Here," he'd said, and held out the brimming glass. They tapped the rims against each other and tipped the glasses high. Shot by shot they drunk and slowly knocked the bottle back. When the muster bell rang, there was only a little Amasek in the bottom of the bottle. "To your first kill," his father had slurred. His mother, a thin, worn, earnest-looking woman, had joined in with the last toast. It was a short walk to the muster point, where other white shields were being loaded onto rail trucks, their apprehensive faces staring out from under their Cadian pattern helmets. All the tracks led straight to the landing fields outside Casa Tyrok. Benedict and his parents pushed through the crowds to find his truck. Both his mother and father had last words for him, though he was damned if he could remember them. He was only 16 and so drunk he could barely stand. There were no tears. It was poor form to show sadness when a Cadian was sent to fight. It was part of the rhythm of life, birth, training, conscription, death. It was natural that a young white shield would go to kill the enemies of the Imperium. Benedict had imagined himself many times taking the straight route south and never seeing his home again. Before climbing aboard, he checked himself one more time to make sure that in his drunken state he had not forgotten anything. He had boots, webbing, jacket, belt, combat knife, las rifle, 3 battery packs, Imperial primer in his left breast pocket, water canteen in his right. He pulled in a deep breath. He was ready, he told himself, to face anything the galaxy could throw at him. "So," Benedict said. They said goodbye to one another, and his mother briefly embraced him and stuffed a packet of folded brown paper into his jacket pocket. "Crocs jerky," she whispered. She was a tough woman, brought up on a planet where the only trade was war and little given to expressions of emotion. "I want to thank both of you for giving me life. I promise you I will be all that Acadians should," he said. It was a speech he had prepared, but being drunk, he stumbled on his words and left much of it out. Then he saluted and turned to climb aboard the truck. He looked out to wave goodbye to his parents, but darkness was falling, and they had already turned for home. That was the last Benedict had ever seen or heard of his family. For the next 20 years, other guardsmen had been his brothers and sisters, and the Emperor his father. Benedict found it hard to remember his father's face, but had never forgotten the hug his father had given him, and feeling his father's thick arms wrap around him, his broad, rough hands on his back. His mother's voice had never left him. He could recall her whispering Grox jerky into his ear, and those words stayed with him and somehow came to mean, look after yourself, and even, you are well loved, my son. As Cadia revolved beneath them, Warmaster Rice put both hands to the carefully tooled brass railings and leaned forward, his breath misting a little on the chill of the foot-thick glass. He wanted to mark this moment with something momentous, yet poetic and memorable. Something that could go in his memoirs when, and if, retirement came. As if sensing its moment, the Warmaster's servitor scribe, an emaciated body with augmetic stylus right arm and waist-mounted scroll, shuffled forward, knocking a few other sycophants out of the way. The scribe had come with the title of Warmaster, and Rice seemed to rather like having his every word taken down for posterity. And now there was no more Deucalion crusade for Rice to lead. It occurred to many of them that perhaps Rice might not be a Warmaster much longer. Perhaps, many were thinking, Rice's star was on the wane, and it was time for them to find one that was rising. Rice coughed to clear his throat, then his bass baritone rang out. We have returned to our mother in her time of direst need. There was more, and Bendik thought the Warmaster's speech could have been better, but the Warmaster finished with a flourish, like an imperial preacher waxing lyrical. Men shall not say that we forgot our duty, nor that we forgot from whence we came. As he spoke, there was the scratch of stylus on vellum, leaving a trail of precise minuscule in neatly justified blocks of text. Bendix could not help reading over the scribe's shoulder, while Rice paused, as if waiting for it to catch up, letting the words ring through his head. Benedict looked away. The Warmaster turned, and as if picking him out for not paying due attention, asked, What do you think, Major Benedict? She looks peaceful enough to me, Benedict stammered. Rice smiled indulgently. Yes, Cadia sent out the call, and we have returned. Her need has not been forgotten. The motors of the Warmaster's bionic arm whined gently, as he patted Benedict on the back. No doubt he had meant this to be a human gesture, but Benedict did not find the crude press of metal fingers comforting. How long until we disembark? Rice asked a thin, pale officer with a shock of white hair. The officer snapped his heels together. Governor Perelska has sent his personal barge to bring you down, Warmaster. Sacramentum is being loaded onto it as we speak. As soon as it is stowed down, I will let you know, sir. The freight captain did not think it would be more than a few hours. Sacramentum was Rice's Leviathan, a brass-worked marvel of gunnery and armour and engineering that had spearheaded at least 2 assaults on the high world of Owen. Good, Rice said. Good. He was one of those men who liked to fill silences with his own voice. At that moment, one of the adjutants touched the Warmaster's sleeve. The commander of a battalion of Mordians had arrived on the viewing deck. They were standing by the lift in a formal and uninviting group, waiting for an introduction. Ah, Rice said, as if a passing chat with the Mordians was all he wanted in the world, and nodded to them all. Excuse me, gentlemen. As Rice's entourage fell away, only one other man remained, staring down at Cadia. Bendix took him in through the corner of his eye. He was a first-degree general from his epaulettes, but he wore combat drab, not dress uniform, and had both hands placed firmly on the brass railing, his fists clenching it so tightly that his knuckles had gone white. His boots had not been polished since embarkation. There were mud splatters on the hem of his coat, and dried mud stains on his knees as well. That was a detail worthy of note. Generals didn't often kneel, never mind in mud. Bendix couldn't hold himself back. Excuse me, sir, he ventured. Are you General Creed? The man turned to him. He was broad and bull-necked, with close-shaven hair. His eyes were hard and intense. Benedict coloured. Sorry, I mean, are you the General Creed?
Well, there are four generals named Creed, last I counted.
The other man's eyes had a mischievous twinkle. General Osaka Creed.
Yes, I am one of two whose name is Osaka Creed. The other, a fine old gentleman of 320 years, has retired to the training world of Kadak. I spent 6 months with him there, working with Katachans. Good bunch. General Osaka Creed had a particularly good stock of Amasek, though I didn't think much of his stubs. They were a little too refined for me. I like something with a little more punch.
Creed's mouth almost smiled.
As he came first, he has the honour of being plain General Osaka Creed. Because I am the second, I am known as Osaka E. Creed.
He put out a hand and Benedict returned the hard grip.
I am honoured to meet you, Benedict said.
Creed seemed amused by the word.
Honoured?
Yes, Benedict said. We were in the same draft.
Were we now?
Yes. I always thought that my career had gone well until I heard you had made general. The first of our draft. To make general by the age of 40 years, Terran standard, was a feat almost unheard of. Once he'd got over his envy, he'd studied Creed and his tactics. And when they'd been in the same war zone, Benedict had followed Creed's career through memos and regimental dispatches.
How do you feel? I mean, you've been predicting this recall for nearly 2 years now, Benedict said.
Creed seemed impressed, but there was no joy for him in being right.
I have. You're right. It would have been better if the recall had started 2 years earlier.
And you were demoted for your troubles,
only pending investigation. Rise, should I say, Warmaster Rise, stuck by me.
Is that because you saved the day on Relient 5?
Creed laughed. His breath smelt faintly of Amasek. Creed was also famous for his prodigious appetite for the bottle.
That's probably half the reason.
The other half is that Rice is no fool.
There was a moment's pause as Creed took in Benedict's uniform and regimental badge.
You must be Major Isaiah Benedict of the Cadian 101st. Twice awarded the Valorous Unit Citation. You have one of the most highly decorated tank regiments in the whole of Cadia. Between you, your crew has won 6 Steel Crosses, 4 Steel Aquila, and the Order of the Eagle's Claw.
Benedict's cheeks coloured, and he didn't know what to say.
Well, yes, sir. My regiment prides itself on its service to the Golden Throne.
The smell of Amasek grew stronger as Creed leaned in and spoke to Benedict in a low, confidential voice.
Did you ever think you would make it back to Cadia alive?
Benedict knew the statistics as well as any other. Half of all able-bodied Cadians left the planet to fight across the Imperium of Man, but fewer than 1 in 1,000 of those ever returned. He barely needed to think.
Never.
You? Creed pursed his lips and his knuckles whitened again. Night was falling on Cadia, and the Eye of Terror was starting to glow. There was a long pause. Creed smiled.
Oh, I've always known that I would come back.
Benedict did not know how to answer that. He looked down at their homeworld, grey and blue in the half-light of a sun. And you really think Cadia is in danger?
The utmost danger.
Creed's nostrils flared.
The whole sector has been under attack for years. Plague, treachery, heresy. We see all these proud defences, but Cadia is like a Kaza whose walls have already been undermined.
Benedict was lost for words again. They both looked up to the viewing dome above their heads. In the darkness of space, they could see the turret lights of orbital defences, floating gun rigs, and the bright engine flares of patrolling frigates and stub-nosed defence monitors.
You really think so?
I know so.
Creed smiled humorlessly, and his eyes flickered briefly across the room to where a rather embarrassed-looking Rice was trying to explain a joke to the Mordian commander.
Our enemies have planned this for 1,000 years. maybe more. And we have grown complacent. Look, Rice is more interested in little pleasantries with those dreadful Morians than planning for the war. Cadian High Command is full of men like him. They have no idea how present the threat is. Even the High Lords of Terror suspect little, I guess. The Cadian Gate is in the utmost danger. And it is up to us, honest men like you and me, to ensure that she does not fall. Cadia cannot fall. She will not fall. There was a long pause. Benedict felt flattered by the word us, but he was shaken by the ominous warnings. What can we do? We shall fight like bastards, Creed said. And we have to be more devious than our foes. Benedict smiled. Is that possible? Life in the Guard has taught me three things, Creed said. Endurance, grit, and the understanding that with faith and courage and good leadership, anything is possible. I hope you're right. Creed gave him a long look and leaned in once more. When I was young, my drill sergeant had a favourite saying. What is that? Hope, Creed said, is the first step on the road to disappointment.